From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Maryland, its counties, and Baltimore will need to spend billions more than they do now to make good on the recommendations of the high-level panel headed by retired University Chancellor Britt Kerwin.
The Kerwin Commission is attempting to make Maryland schools into some of the best in the world. And so they've gone and looked very carefully at the best models in the world. And what they are doing is changing a whole raft of things.
Liz Bowie, who covers education for the Baltimore Sun, catches us up on what part of the Kerwin challenge the legislature intends to take up this year and why advocates for Baltimore schools say it's not moving fast enough. Plus, we discuss education reform with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush in town for the Baltimore Speaker Series, all on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
The Kerwin Commission, the Blue Ribbon Panel with a plan for making Maryland's public schools some of the best in the world, has put a price tag on its proposals, but the state legislature is not expected to vote on the full plan in the current session, and the ACLU and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund contend it's urgent to get more money to Baltimore schools quickly. Later in the show, we're going to talk about education with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who's in town for the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University. Right now, Liz Bowie is with us. She covers education for the Baltimore Sun, so she's been following all the twists and turns of the Kerwin Commission. Welcome back to the show, Liz.
Thank you.
In broad terms, what are the big changes the Kerwin Commission says are needed?
The Kerwin Commission is attempting to make Maryland schools into some of the best in the world. And so they've gone and looked very carefully at the best models in the world. Where are countries and cities getting very good results? And they've taken those ideas and have tried to adapt them to the Maryland circumstances. And what they are doing is changing a whole raft of things. They're trying to really raise the professionalism of the teaching profession in Maryland by requiring more certification, requiring higher standards to get into the profession. They're also saying we need to pay teachers a lot more, $60,000 in a starting salary. So they're attempting to say this is a profession that should attract the best and the brightest that we have. They're also trying to raise the number of children who are from low-income families who will get early childhood education. They will give low-income kids in 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds eventually would have access to good preschool. They also want to change how high school is viewed. So they're going to, if this goes through, you would take your normal 2 years of high school, and then you would basically decide whether you want to go into a career track or an academic track that takes you to college. And if you choose a career, then you could actually get into a certification program so that when you graduate from high school, you will be employable with a living wage or be able to get a job with a living wage. So they're making all kinds of very important changes if they go through to this education system.
And what do they say it would cost to do that?
They say $3.8 billion. That's not next year, but by 2030.
But that's a yearly cost.
That's an annual cost.
Of the increment of how much more we'd be paying for that kind of education system in 10 years.
That's correct.
Than we're paying now.
That's correct. But it would be phased in over many years. So the state and local governments would increase funding annually every year until they got to the $3.8 billion.
When the chair of the commission, Britt Kerwin, former chancellor of the University of Maryland system, briefed two state Senate committees last week. He urged legislators to find a way to fund all of the proposals.
The commission feels very strongly that this is not a pick and choose your favorite policy area, that this is an integrated whole, that if you pick them apart, you won't get the results that we know we will get based on what the high performers do.
What will the legislature do in this session?
It's really unclear what the legislature will do. There is about $236 million, if my memory is correct, $236 million that could be put right now or sort of somewhat earmarked right now towards increasing education funding. But that could be decreased. Every day of the shutdown, Maryland loses more than $1 million, and they have to make, the legislature has to make that up. And it's not clear exactly where the governor stands in terms of that. More money going to education. Part of that would likely be go to school construction. So the legislative leaders will have to really put a lot of, have to cut elsewhere to find more money for education. The Kerwin Commission would like them to allot $360 million more next year to education. Whether that will be found in the budget is really unclear.
It's Liz Bowie, who covers education for the Baltimore Sun. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the latest moves in lining up funds for Maryland's public schools. You reported last week on a letter the ACLU of Maryland and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund sent to Governor Hogan about funding for Baltimore schools. What's that about?
Well, I think that the ACLU saw that it was unclear whether there really would be more money for education next year. And so they said, we can't wait any longer. They have essentially threatened to reopen a lawsuit that was from 1994 that was successful in proving that the city needed more money back then. They could go back to the circuit court in Baltimore and say there is not adequate funding for the city of Baltimore. And judge, you should force the state to spend more money. That pressure about 10 years ago or more was what drove the legislature to enact the Thornton funding formula.
Which was sort of the predecessor to...
Kerwin. Yeah.
So much of Britt Kerwin's message has been that Maryland schools across the state, not just Baltimore, are very mediocre. They don't stack up well among U.S. schools, and U.S. schools don't stack up well among schools globally. Does that increase political pressure to move quickly?
Well, we've known for a long time where Maryland stood. I think there was, so on the best tests that we have, national tests we have, Maryland ranks about in the middle of the pack. I think that probably a lot of people don't really know that because in the past, governors have claimed that we have the best educational system in the world or the state or the nation. And so I think that there really hasn't been a reckoning about that quite yet.
The Maryland Center on Economic Policy, which is a progressive group, issued a report that the state could pay for at least part of the Kerwin Commission recommendations by what they call cleaning up the tax code, essentially raising taxes on wealthy Marylanders to match the burden on middle-class taxpayers. Is that the kind of issue the legislature is putting off until next year?
Yes, absolutely. I think that next year they'll have the real discussion about how they're going to pay for this. next fall, the Kerwin Commission will have to recommend how the money gets allocated. So,
and where it comes from.
And where it comes from. And specifically, they have to decide what the local governments will be required to spend to fund this $3.8 billion. So the state would not have to come up with $3.8 billion more by 2030. That would be split between local and state government. So they have to write the formula that decides how much local government picks up. So that's going to be a very interesting discussion.
And that's a year away.
And that's a year away.
Liz, thanks for walking us through this.
You're welcome.
Liz Bowie covers education for the Baltimore Sun. We have links to her recent reporting and to information about the Kerwin Commission recommendations at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break, and then we'll talk schools with Jeb Bush. Stay tuned for that.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Jeb Bush, the son and brother of presidents, served as governor of Florida from 1999 to 2007. But many Americans may remember him better as one of the crowd of candidates on stage for debates during the 2016 Republican primaries, when Donald J. Trump called Bush a low-energy person. And Bush once said he was, quote, sick and tired of him going after my family, close quote. Bush is coming to Baltimore tomorrow for the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University, and he joins us now by phone. Welcome to On the Record, Governor Bush.
Hey, how are you, Sheila?
Just great. How are you?
Doing great.
I know you are focused these days very much on how to improve the nation's education system. I want to ask you about that because Maryland is engaged in a deep dive on education also. But first, a little politics. Is the Republican Party of your father, your brother, and yourself, in your view, is that party over?
No, I don't think so. But the party, both parties are cracking up. They're dividing up in their disparate parts. There's less unity of purpose for our political parties in the world we're in today. But just traditional conservatism of limited government, entrepreneurial capitalism, personal responsibility, a strong national defense, I hope it still has a role to play in the future of our country, because it's when you apply it properly, it's led to greater prosperity for more people than any other kind of system in the world. So we're in a transition to something yet to be defined for sure in our political parties, both the Democratic Party and Republican Party. And while I won't be a candidate, I certainly want to play a role to help shape my party's future.
Won't be a candidate. You have ruled out everyone?
No, I wanted to make sure that I got that in before you asked me.
It's very clear to you that you don't intend to stand for election again. You predicted while you were running that Donald Trump would be, quote, the chaos president. Why do you think he succeeded?
Well, it's pretty clear in his history as an adult that the way he operates is pretty chaotic, both in his business, his personal life, and it was not I didn't have to like have some kind of incredible vision to think that he would all of a sudden, you know, I don't think a tiger changes its stripes. I mean, it's understandable. And the tragedy is that, you know, there's been a lot of interesting and important things done in his administration that don't get much attention. We have solid economic growth, full employment, rising wages. The jobs numbers of last month were absolutely out of the park, phenomenally good. The judiciary has been fortified, I believe, in a more traditional way. So all these good things, because of the chaos, people don't even really know much about. I think if the president would go back to kind of a regular order way of doing things, his approval rating would be in the mid to high 50s.
Specifically on immigration, do you see a way forward to create a consensus?
I do. Not in the current environment where you're, you know, where the discussion is about symbolisms of, you know, whether it's a fence or a wall or border security. Or, I mean, they're not getting to the core issue, which is we have a broken immigration system that's not enforced. And we have to fix the immigration system and enforce the laws of the country. I think you can have a compassionate immigration policy, one that also embraces the potential for sustained economic growth by shifting to immigrants that are, you know, driven by for economic purposes, protect the border in all sorts of ways that are appropriate, forge consensus on that, and deal with the people that are here illegally by giving them a path to earned legal status rather than amnesty. So there's a lot of things that could be done, but the debate right now is pretty sterile and one, you know, singularly focused on the terminology. Is it a wall or is it a fence? And, you know, it's just, it's embarrassing, to be honest with you, that now a whole lot of people are having to suffer with the government shutdown over a political fight that isn't even really at the core of what we need to do to fix our immigration system.
I'm not sure I followed the first point. If I heard it correctly, you talked about shifting to immigration driven by economic.
Yeah. So the number of legal immigrants that come to our country is about 1 million a year. 80% of those come by petition by their family, a spouse, minor children, adult siblings, and adult parents. And we are the only country in the world that allows for adult siblings and adult parents to come into our country by family petitioning. The only country in the world. So 80% of our immigrants come by family, compared to Canada, where 80% come for economic purposes. And the net effect is that Canada has an immigration system that creates economic vitality for all Canadians, and Americans could do the exact same thing, and everyone would benefit. So what you do is you narrow the number of people coming to spouse and minor children, rather than the expanded version of family, and the 500,000 people that otherwise wouldn't come in, that are the innovators, the people that are creating patents, the people that want to work hard, whether it's in the fields or in technology sector where we have big shortages, we should have an economically driven immigration system.
And obviously economics drives many of the people who come without papers, who come illegally.
Right. Now, if there was a legal path for them to come and work temporarily, they would do so for sure. A guest worker program is desperately needed for many of the areas of our country that rely on agriculture. There are broad areas where there's broad agreement amongst Democrats and Republicans, but both sides see this as a political wedge issue rather than something to solve. And that's the problem with Washington, D.C. politics today. Everything's a symbol. Everything's a wedge issue. Everything's another way to push someone down rather than solving problems for Americans.
That's former Florida governor and former Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He'll be in Baltimore Tuesday, January 29th, for the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University. After you wrapped up as governor in 2007, you started the Foundation for Excellence in Education. What is its focus?
Sheila, it is focused on working in as many states as we're invited in. We work in about 40 states to provide a suite of reforms that require changes in law or changes in rules to be able to create a more open education environment where there's more innovation and where there's a greater probability of rising student achievement. You know, that's kind of the whole objective of K-12 education, which is where our focus is. So we focus on school choice, on new innovations related to harnessing technology in the right way to customize the learning, personalize the learning experience for each student. We have a lot of subject matter expertise on early childhood literacy efforts, where Florida has led the nation with huge gains, particularly with low-income kids. Accountability in a way that doesn't drive people crazy with over-testing, but has connects rising student achievement with the adults in the system to make sure that they're rewarded when they do good work and that there's a different option when there's failure. So it's a broad range of policy areas, but the ultimate objective is to shift away from this monolithic education system that worked 100 years ago but really is not as relevant in the world we live in today.
You have written about rewarding and retaining America's teachers. That's also a focus of the reform effort here in Maryland, which is named for and headed by former University of Maryland Chancellor Britt Kerwin, the Kerwin Commission. What do you envision for teachers?
I'd love to see the range of pay for teachers reflect the range of quality of teachers as well. Great teachers, in many cases, end up leaving the classroom because they can make more money either outside the education system or as principals or inside the bureaucracy. And if we had a system that rewarded teachers that consistently had like-kind kids do a year and a half worth of improvement in their education, for, you know, as an example, you would end up paying them more. But we also have to recognize that when poor teachers are in a classroom and students only get a half a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time, there has to be mitigation done to immediately try to fix the problem of the teacher, or ultimately that teacher should be forced out of the classroom for, you know, on behalf of the students that suffer because of it. So turning teaching into a profession rather than a collective bargaining union process, I think ultimately is the 21st century solution.
The Kerwin Commission, it sounds as if it's looking at the same kinds of things in Maryland. It's talking about revised training for teachers, knowing that we would need fewer if there is less churn, if fewer teachers leave within the first few years of teaching, and making it a profession that holds more respect in the economy as well as the society.
I think one of the first steps would be to transform our schools of education or find other options other than the schools of education to form teachers. So my experience as governor and in my post-governor life is that the schools of education do a lousy job to prepare teachers to teach, for example, elementary school teachers. Many of them come to school not prepared to, not understanding the new research on how to teach kids how to read. Well, that's the primary building block for the rest of a child's learning experience. So these are dedicated young people that come into the classroom ill-prepared, and I think schools of education have some responsibility to provide better preparation. And then there should be ongoing training across the board for sure, and I assume that the commission that you're referring to is focused on that as well.
What are you going to focus on when you're here in Baltimore?
I'm going to talk about the convergence of these big, big changes in our society, primarily driven by the acceleration of technology and the disruptive nature of it today in our lives, at the very time when we've kind of lost the safety net that has always propelled America forward. And I'm not talking necessarily about the government safety net, but the safety net of personal responsibility, of strong, wholesome families, of vibrant communities. We're a bottom-up country, and we've lost our way at the very time when we need those institutions to be able to, you know, to deal with this disruption. And then what are the policies we need to do to get back on track so that this wave of technology doesn't drown us, but that we can ride it to a better life?
Very interesting. I look forward to seeing you here. Thank you.
You bet, Sheila.
Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush will be in Baltimore tomorrow for the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Glad you're with us. Hope you'll come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.